seen in Judah, as well as some bizarre theories about Osama bin Laden, Adolf Hitler, and B'nai B'rith. On November 8th, I would love to hear this show. November 18th, because it sounds like the most interesting view from space, the Space Man show that I've ever heard. Because this guy, I mean, I tried listening to this guy, and it was terrible. I mean, he would say something and leave a long, long, long gap. And then say something again and leave a long, long gap. And people would phone into our show, and they'd say, oh, have you heard the Spaceman? Did you hear the Spaceman? I go, no, we haven't. I didn't know anything about it. And they go, oh, yeah, he's really good. You'd like that, right? They didn't realize we weren't really doing, at this point in time when we were doing, a quote-unquote conspiracy theory show. I mean, I maybe did that for the first 6 months just to carry on with what had been done before by Wayne Morris. But after that, I mean, especially when Daniel got there, I mean, we weren't really doing conspiracy theory. Anyway, here's what Cora said. This is their apology. Last week's AM 640 broadcast of A View from Space, hosted by Gary Bell, included remarks and viewpoints that ran counter to Corus Entertainment policies in regards to discrimination on matters of race, religion, national origin, and ethnicity. Mr. Bell's comments were unacceptable and problematic in that they included references to material that can only be viewed as anti-Semitic, the apology stated. We sincerely apologize to our listeners and anyone else who was offended by Mr. Bell's comments. Chorus Radio recognizes that our broadcast licenses are a privilege. Therefore, we are taking strong and immediate steps to ensure such an episode is never repeated. Talk about this, my little appearance on your program, being a bookended about what we were talking about at the beginning with related to Howard Stern and not being able to do certain things on Canadian radio. And it was the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs and the B'nai B'rith Canada said they'd been working on the issue for the past weeks. We kind of knew that they had been at us too. They were trying, B'nai B'rith was desperately trying to get rid of our program. Right. But we never really gave them the ability to do it, you know? But we annoyed them. We annoyed them for sure. But anyway, it goes on and,
okay, great. How come he could get away with that? He's a known anti-Semitic show for 10 years or whatever. Well, it was 2002, 15 years at least.
You know, I don't know. I mean, the reason I would like to hear this program as it was broadcast is I can scarcely believe that it was really objectionable.
It must have been mild because he couldn't have been too blatant, but he was able to be anti-Semitic in some way. The point is, I see a point there. This is the end of the dent in the Bolshevik control of Canada. Because this guy, remember, the Bolsheviks, they also divide and counter. So they encourage any kind of animosity. So even though they worked with the Zionists when it was convenient, they also promoted the anti-Semitic right wing, the moral majority. See, so if this guy's anti-Semitic, but he's coming out of Toronto and he's been able to do it for 15 or more years, that's pretty odd. But something has shifted, and he had to go.
Okay, here he is. This is the kind of show that it was, okay, just to give people who are unfamiliar.
It's the elite's way of controlling both sides. Bradland, you see, has been and still is the liaison between the warring factions. You see, the two, besides fighting, must be coordinated.
Does that give you an idea?
Yeah, he's doing Bob Marshall or me, you know, 20, 30 years later.
But it's so boring.
I know. We made it interesting. Now, the reason you guys, let me just say, Greg, you guys, you brought in bottom-up satire about whatever was on the TV body, the crazy journalists and all that. See, that's where you didn't fall into the bottom-up. You brought in enough top-down, so it muddied what you were doing.
I mean, could you imagine listening to that for 3 hours or 4 hours or
no,
however long it was.
I listened to it once for 10 seconds. He was on when we were there in 2002.
Yeah, I know. We'd constantly be hearing people saying, oh, the spaceman. It's so offensive. I mean, I don't mind him doing whatever he wants to do. And obviously, he might have been paid to do it. I don't know. But I doubt it.
People use it to fall asleep, maybe.
Well, the thing is, that's the kind of show that's on a Sunday night when they haven't got anything to put on. And he probably did it for free, which makes his cancellation even worse. But
anyway, it's very boring. I mean, Alex Jones is better at it. At least Jones has an irritating voice and growls.
Yeah, and he's yelling and...
This is Canada Light. Alex Jones Light.
It's all this sort of low stuff where he's talking very whispering
Canadian.
Into the... Yeah, it's awful.
It's just the sleepy continent of Canada. The sleepy world, the great white north. That's what he did. That's all you guys had once I left. See, I created the prototype for the fucking Alex Jones and everything. And what was extra special is that I wasn't aligned to anything, so we featured all kinds of conspiracy angles.
Weren't you actually working for Chorus? I mean, weren't you doing a show for Chorus Media? You were, weren't you?
I think so. Yeah, we were on 640 Hot Music. Or, what was it, Hot?
Were you on AM? Yeah. You were on the same station.
We were at 640 AM.
We
were on Chorus. Yeah, right.
Yeah, Chorus Entertainment.
And
it was
Nelson,
over there.
We were on, when were we on? Sunday night?
Yeah,
I think we were on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I guess this guy came on after us or something? I don't think so. He must have been. They replaced us. He replaced us once. He had another time slot, I guess. And then Nelson was on for a couple of years, and then he was forced off, he said, by Mulroney. And
I think he might. I think Mulroney might have been on. He might have been on. Yeah, he could have replaced you. He might not have. Anyway, it was either he was on Saturday nights or something like that. I don't know.
Right, and then they gave him our Sunday night because we had Sunday night. But the Nelson was on for a good couple of years.
Was
maybe
he really?
Three years.
Yeah, with Richard.
No.
Okay, Richard.
It was.
No?
It was July. 2002 we started, and I lasted till the first week of November. Then Nelson goes through 2003, and he's got Sleeper on there. Matt Shepard, who we were talking about many hours ago. Matt Shepard is on there, and Matt would call me before each show and get the line from the bottom up from me and then put it in there. So I was inputting the show for another year through Matt. And then... Then I think you get another wacky guy on with him, but not the CFRB guy, Richard. He had his own scene going at CFRB, and Nelson was sometime beyond it. But eventually, Richard went professional. He got knocked off, and then he went somewhere else. I don't know where he is, but I think he's back at CFRB, and he has his own show, and he occasionally substitutes for George Norrie on Coast to Coast.
Really?
Yeah, Richard...
Sarrett?
Yeah, Richard Sarrett.
Was when Nelson kept going there with was James B still there?
No, James B got kicked off before me, but there was still basically Sleeper and maybe some other guy I don't know that he added.
So James B got kicked off before you left it?
Yeah, Nelson got mad at him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Why did he get mad at him?
Because James B. was trying to, get money from Nelson. See, if you went around Nelson, do not bring up money. Because then what he's afraid of, you're just after his money, and his father was very wealthy. If you start doing that, Nelson went paranoid, and he got rid of you pretty quickly.
Right.
And James started asking for a loan or this and that to go down to New York. He actually came down to... New York after 9/11. Well, yeah, no. Okay, so it's about a year or so later. Yeah, 2002 when I'm still on the air. He came down with his girlfriend, and they visited us on City Island, and he had a shocking experience. He was in a bar the previous night downtown New York, and he started doing the Nelson line about the conspiracy of 911, and he was immediately threatened by, you know, powerful fucking hard hats who were going to kick the shit out of him for saying anything. And he didn't realize that America was different from Toronto. And you don't talk that way in a bar, especially in New York City where so many people had their friends killed in 911. Yeah. So he came out the next day totally, what do you call it, chastened and nervous and happy he didn't get beat up. And he said, I didn't realize, you know, it's a year later. Yeah, no, that's not fucking long enough. So he went back to Toronto amazed at the tribal feeling in New York City.
Well,
and then he fucked up with Nelson. They knocked. Okay, so he visited me, let's say in the summer of 2002. He's gone by September, and then I'm gone by November. And there was another guy who did the film reviews from a Queen Street Video. He was on for a while after I went. So that was that. But I had my guy Sleeper, and stuff that I wanted to say, Sleeper would say it. And Nelson either didn't understand it was coming from me, or he did and he didn't care. And then Nelson got in trouble because he had a source. He had a ridiculous waitress who claimed that she had the inside to the Toronto cop station. And she would come on with, you know, exposing the chief of police. So eventually the police department raided Nelson because of what he was doing. He was criticizing the chief of police in Toronto with this ridiculous schizoid waitress claiming this, you know, her information she'd be spewing on a show. So it really became a garbage dump show. And Nelson was arrested. They found marijuana in his home and guns. But he was able to say, and he's true, because he had worked for the OPP as a helicopter, he had a license to have guns. The day the album came out in April 92, 10 years before, Dave and I and Belanger had a party at his office. And after a while, he got paranoid at me and Dave and Belanger, and he pulled a gun out of his desk and put it on the drawer there, on the bureau, on the top of the desk. And Jerry and Dave were going, what the fuck? They were saying, what's wrong with Nelson? He felt like cut out. I'm laughing with Jerry and Dave, and Nelson feels isolated, so he gets paranoid and threatens everybody with his powers. He pulls the gun out. But he's allowed to have a gun. And also he had a medical excuse for the marijuana. So he got off. And then about shortly after that, he was kicked off the air. You could Google it. Put in Nelson Thal, you know, Mojo loses show. And you'll see he's saying that Mulroney and Bush would meet up in King City. You know King City in Ontario?
Yeah.
They had something going on. I don't know. Maybe Mulroney lived up there. And they would meet up there and conspire against Nelson. Now, you know there's a you got all kinds of weird weeklies. You got the homeless newspaper there. You ever seen that?
Yeah.
Well, the guy there, the main journalist, he was an official journalist, and then he got fired, so he became a nutball and started his homeless paper. Every now and then he would do an attack on Nelson, literally Nelson. You go after Nelson, talking about what a liar, a hypocrite he was. And Yeah, I probably told you. I called up the guy. I found out about him, and I said, oh, I got to find out who's knocking Nelson. I'm all for that. And so he told me his whole history, and he sent me the emails with the cover stories, which I must have somewhere in my computers, with the actual articles.
I do have Michael Posner. Do you know who that is?
No. Yeah, Michael Posner is Nelson's outlet in the Globe and Mail.
Okay.
He's the guy that would write pro Nelson articles. You know who eventually exposed Nelson was Robert Fulford. You know who he is?
Really?
Yeah. Fulford couldn't take it after a while, and he said, "How come?" Because Fulford wrote for the Toronto Star. He worked for Nelson's father, And he couldn't believe that Nelson's father produced this monster who's doing these ridiculous conspiracy theories, and Fulver's the mainstream guy. You know, he's not thinking like Alex Jones. So he just thought Nelson was a renegade black sheep spinoff from Mr. Burnett Thal, and wrote an article really putting down Nelson eventually.
Hmm.
And remember what Bob Marshall, when he did his show in the 80s, he would address it to Mr. Mulroney and Bob Fulford. That's what every international connection was addressed to them. So Fulford got back. What would that be, 25 years later or something? You could look that up. Google that article.
I thought it was interesting here that Thal joined the board of directors of Stanley Media Incorporated.
Oh, well, you want to go on Google, no, Wikipedia, and look up Stanley Media and Nelson Thal. Nelson teamed up with, this is an incredible story, Peter Paul. See, we went to, now does this remind you of anything, Bert? Do you recognize anything I'm going to say about Peter Paul and Nelson and Hollywood and the Oscars? Do you remember that story?
No. No.
Okay, good, because I've said it a few times. I don't want to be boring, but anyway, so we go to the Oscars in 92, and Mary McLuhan's there, and there's we were invited to speak at one of the Hollywood parties, so we do that. Nelson freaks out. He goes on stage to speak first. Because everybody's yakking and not really listening, he got mad. He didn't know what to do to talk to an empty room. So he came up and said, I can't do it. So I went on there, and I just talked to nobody because I've been doing it for decades, right? And I'm used to nobody listening. And I was complimented by various people after. I did a pretty good rant. So the next day, I come out of the bedroom. There's Nelson with this executive guy. And Nelson says, this is confidential, Bob. You'll have to leave the room. So I left. And it turned out to be a guy named Peter Paul. Now, put in Peter Paul, P-A-U-L, on Wiki. And this is the guy that almost toppled the Clintons. He was proposing to Nelson that Hollywood had to get serious and make a university out of their culture. So he knew Nelson knew something about McLuhan. So he wanted Nelson to advise Peter Paul on making some kind of university, a museum of Hollywood's life as a medium. You know what I mean? Just the history of it. Something serious. So Nelson fucked around with him for a while. And then in 93, I left, early 93, I left Toronto. So I lost touch with what Nelson was doing. By the end of the 90s, when Clinton retired, again, November 7th, which is Nelson's birthday, November 7th, 2000, when Bush almost won, and then it was not completed till 6 weeks later or so. Anyways, Stan Lee, Nelson had met through Peter Paul, Stan Lee of, what is it, Marvel Comics? And
Stan Lee Media.
Yeah, and he and Peter Paul got a gig going with Stan Lee and Bill Clinton. They were going to open up something in China. Well, all hell broke loose, and you can read the details in the Wikipedia thing on Peter Paul and Nelson.
I'm going to link it right now.
Yeah, you're looking for it?
I'm still reading. No, I got it.
Okay, good. So don't look at it too much yet. Let me just say a few lines. So what happened is Peter Paul, around 2000, gets in big trouble, and I visit Nelson in 2001 or 2000, 2002, and he shows me the 60-minute interview with Paul. Paul had to run to Brazil because he had the goods on Hillary and Bill on fundraising in L.A., and they were out to kill him or something, so he ran off to Brazil. So there he is being interviewed on 60 Minutes from his captivity in Brazil, or his, you know, under duress retreat. And that's the guy that was in our suite in April 92. Okay, so Peter Paul and Nelson team up something. I think he might go to jail. Well, it might say there where he goes to jail, but you get into the next couple of years. Now Nelson sues Stan Lee. And this thing goes on for years. And it becomes like a billion-dollar suit. One day, I wasn't aware of it, but before I did, Nelson sends me an email, like teasing me. Well, Bob, he says, Bob, you're an asshole, but I'm not, and I'm moving to L.A., I'm moving to Hollywood Hills, because in 2 weeks I'll be a billionaire and I will own Hollywood. Okay, this is the email I get from Nelson, who is, you know, nuts anyways. So I call up his divorced wife, and I say, "What's is Nelson moving to L.A.? No. And she knew a bit about what Nelson was doing, even though they weren't living together anymore. So I asked a few questions. She says, and I told her, she said, "Well, that's nuts." And I said, "Okay, Nelson's just nuts." But then I find out that this trial is going on, and they have a hearing before the judge or whatever, and he thinks he's going to win it. And you'll see in the Wikipedia, he loses it. They try it again. I think they went three times, getting up to 2010-11. And the third time, the judge said, you fucking asshole, stop doing these nuisance suits against Stan Lee. You have no case. Goodbye. And Nelson has been not heard of since then.
Well, this is really amazing.
Yeah, you're reading
this
it.
Well, I'm reading bits and pieces of it. I'm listening to you mainly. But, I mean, it's sort of following along with what you're saying. And, you know, yours is more specific about certain things. I mean, it says that this guy spent 4 years under house arrest wearing an ankle bracelet. He's out of jail now. He's he had a 10-year imprisonment term.
I think he died. Look at his dates. I think Peter Paul's dead.
Really? No.
I'm not sure. Okay.
No, he's 69 years old. This is what he's known for. Conspiracy, drug dealing, and securities fraud. And there's a picture of him with, not coincidentally, there's a picture of him with a smiling Hillary Clinton in 2000.
Yes. Oh, he had something on them, and they nailed him. And you're saying he was under house arrest for 4 years, but actually 10 years?
Yeah, he had a 10-year term. In 2009, Paul accepted a plea bargain and was sentenced to 10 years in prison in order to pay over $11 million in restitution to Merrill Lynch and Speer, Leeds, and Kellogg. He self-surrendered on September 30th, 2009, but subsequently tried to have the plea bargain annulled, claiming the judge coerced him into agreeing to the deal. In March 2011, the courts rejected this attempt, and Paul continued to serve his 10-year imprisonment term, and it said he was imprisoned in Texas until he was paroled on the day before Christmas, 2014.
Right. So he didn't serve his 10 years, but he had spent 2000 to 2004, 4 years in house arrest in Brazil.
Well, he was arrested in Brazil and jailed there, and there was an extradition. I didn't think there was extradition to the United States in Brazil, but anyway. This is 2001, August 3rd, 2001.
Yeah, that's about when I saw the 60 Minutes, you know, at Nelson's.
So he was delivered in September 2003 to Brooklyn, New York for arraignment and trial. So essentially, I guess he was in jail since then, right? And that's why, but he was under house arrest. I don't know. I guess he wasn't actually in jail. He was in house arrest. But I guess they counted that amount of time that he'd spent, maybe, as part of his time. But, yeah.
He actually went to jail in 2009.
Yeah, yeah. 11.
So, look.
2011.
In April 92, I walk out of the room. There's stupid Nelson talking to this asshole. I am asked to leave. I didn't make a big ego thing. Like, fuck you. I'm part of this. I said, okay. So you're glad I walked out of that fucking room. Look what I avoided. Look what I avoided.
I know.
Yeah.
And Nelson got totally drawn into it. So there may be, you have to maybe click on something within the article to see the details of the trials. If you scroll down, there's nothing on the hearings with Stan Lee?
No. No,
okay, well, do a find, like go, you know, copy F, and then you'll write in Stan Lee. It's probably one line, and then you click on that and see the whole trial.
It says, in 1998, Paul co-founded Stan Lee Media with comic book legend Stan Lee and took the company public via reverse merger into a trading shell in August 1999. So in the midst of the internet stock market boom, Stanley Media built a 165-person studio, and the company's market capitalization grew to over $370 million. However, at the end of the year, Stanley Media ran out of money. Paul alleged in a later civil suit, fraud and coercion suit against Bill and Hillary Clinton, that the company failed because of the intervention of Bill Clinton, who he claims persuaded a large investor not to further support the company.
Yeah, I remember Clinton got involved the day after he finished being president.
In February 2001, Stanley Media filed for bankruptcy, and Peter Paul fled to Sao Paulo, Brazil. There he managed 112 Interactive Do Brazil, a seller of English language acquisition software, and fought extradition. He's quite something. And it's interesting that, like, why would Fall be involved with this guy? I wonder what the connections were. Just money?
Yeah, Fall always wanted to be a big operator on some conspiracy level, take over the world. That's what he thought he was going to get from me. He believed my takeover role, but he didn't know how to remain sane within it. He went insane during the Mojo show. Mm-hmm. And that's because he was smoking marijuana for his ringing in his ears. And he had freaked out in 79 before he got married. Linda witnessed it. He went bonkers. Marijuana did it to him. He was hanging out with the Blues Brothers, Aykroyd and Belushi, when they were filming in Toronto in 79. And then so he started getting on, 10 years later or so, he was doing it again, and that's when he started acting erratic. And he said so when I visited him in 2000 or 2001, he said some crazy things to me. I didn't say anything right then. I was being his guest, but then he started having mistresses. And then his wife found out, and then he just spiraled. And by November 2002, he's teamed up with one of the, with Yaphet Kotto, K-O-T-T-O, who plays a black, anti-Bond guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He had moved to Thornhill from California, because when Bush came in, the second Bush, the younger Bush. When Bush came in, he had a friend, he grew up in Harlem, he had a friend, a black friend who was in the CIA, showed up at his home in Colorado and said, "Hey, I'm disappearing. You won't see me anymore, but I'm getting the hell out of here." So the guy was all paranoid, his CIA friend, because of Bush. So he disappears. Yaphet got nervous, so he moved to Ontario and eventually met Nelson. And then me and Don Thiel and Nelson and Yaphet got together somewhere in there. And he's the guy who told me that Muhammad Ali, who he's a close friend of, faked his Parkinson's disease because he was sick of talking to people and being Muhammad Ali. So he would diminish it by, having the shakes. So Yaphet Kotto, so then Nelson gets nuttier, and he decides that I should not be part of the first hour of the show. The station saying, you can't have a co-host calling in from New York. So they wanted me to be a guest on the second hour. But I said, screw that, and I left.
Yeah. Well, that was a mess.
Yeah, but he never recovered. And, when he got fired from the show, he then became a vegetable for about a year. Just lay there in the basement of their home. He was estranged from Linda, and they just looked after this vegetable. And then eventually somehow got better again.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bob, I think I will take my leave now. And before I get cut off again, I know it'll be a few hours before that happens, but I think I'll, and when you mentioned Sleeper, your Matt Sleeper, I thought, oh yeah, I need to go to sleep.
Okay.
But it's been very nice to be on the show.
Well, you've been a great co-host, but what did we finish the Trump point? We covered everything. Why did we get into this Peter Paul? Where were we coming from? I was like, how did we get to
it? I have no idea how we got there.
We were talking about CKLN and Norman Otis Richards.
The Spaceman.
The Spaceman, that was it. Yeah, the Spaceman.
Space,
So he's gone, and I'm saying there's a shift going on across the play, across the world, that's giving Trump more leeway. See, how do you bring peace on the industrial level? You can't fucking stop arms marches, all this crazy hardware economy, but you can create a patina of global harmony on the one-to-one level that Trump's doing. Business will still carry on. Politics is not part of that. You know, the business will carry on competing around the world. But they don't need to have this ideological argument going on. As Frank said, businessmen just want trade. They don't want to blow each other's up.
Right.
It's only nuts in government, which would be the Bolsheviks, or religious fanatics, which is the other part of the Bolshevik thing.
Well, what I've heard about the DPRK is that there are these rare earth minerals in large supply in the DPRK. And since the American economy seems to be completely built on smartphones at this point, or maybe even the world economy, those items are necessary to keep going. It's possible that the DPRK actually might have things that are required for that and are desperately needed, and even
right.
for China as well. But I don't know. I've heard that. I can't remember where I heard that, so I can't source where I heard that.
Victor. I think you heard it from Victor, the guy who runs the homeless newspaper. He was a conspiracy freak. He might have said that.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't think so, but...
You heard it from the Eddie Thal faction.
They shut down that newspaper, huh? That one you're talking about.
Is that right? Why?
Yeah, they did. Oh, you know, the usual anti-Semitism or something. Hate speech. Hate speech.
Eddie Toronto. Anti-Adam Vaughn. Okay, well, very good there. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you in a month.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to just, on that note, mining in North Korea is important to the country's economy. North Korea is naturally abundant in metals such as magnesite, zinc, tungsten, and iron, with magnesite resources of 6 billion tons, second largest in the world, particularly in a particular region. It says North Korea is sitting on $6 to $10 trillion of untapped minerals. So that's from June 16th, 2017. Few think of North Korea as being a prosperous nation, but it is rich in one regard, mineral resources. But however much North Korea could extract from other nations that way, the result would pale in comparison to the value of its largely untapped underground resources. Vast mineral reserves, including iron, gold, magnesite, zinc, copper, limestone, molybdenum, graphite, and more, all told about 200 kinds of minerals. Also present are large amounts of rare earth metals, which factories in nearby countries need to make smartphones and other high-tech products. Estimates as to the value of the nation's mineral resources have varied greatly over the years, made difficult by secrecy and lack of access. North Korea itself has made what are likely exaggerated claims about them. According to one estimate from a South Korean state-owned mining company, they're worth over $6 trillion. Another from a South Korean research institute puts the amount closer to $10 trillion. Now, if they're saying that it's $6 trillion or $10 trillion, it must be more than that, because they would underplay the value.
Right.
So it is, it says private mining is illegal. So there's something here. I have a feeling that, this is a big, reason why. And of course, if there was a nuclear war, it would make a lot of these minerals, perhaps, or some of them, unusable.
Well, Trump probably promised a free 10-year supply of RNA drops to Mr. Kim, and he knows he needs that. So, sure, we're in there. I can't keep track of everything in my vast empire. Did we play the Yosemite Sam cigars? Did we play that one?
Let's play that as the ending of my little segment.
All right. And Michael says, Michael from South Africa says, Bob, Greg was going to bed. Then you said, quote, let me tell you something before you go. End of quote. And then Michael says, and that was an hour ago. That's an hour ago, Greg.
I know. Terrible.
What is it there? It is now 3:35, right?
No, it's 4:35.
4:35. Wow. Okay, here's Yosemite Sam.
If there's any giving away cigars, Yosemite Sam will give them. Step up, gents. Big Hearted Sam is giving away cigars because he loves the people. Here you are, Mr. J. Tanks. Let good old Sam light it for you.
So
he blew up the guy?
Yeah, he blew up. Well, Bugs Bunny had the idea of giving free cigars to help his, because Bugs Bunny then got into the race for mayor, you see? That's how he was challenging Yosemite Sam. So Bugs Bunny's giving away cigars, and then Yosemite Sam comes, pulls out some guns, and forces Bugs Bunny to leave, and then he picks up on the idea to give out the cigars, but Bugs Bunny has sabotaged the cigars so that they explode. So he gives it.
Sam is killed.
No. He blows up a potential voter, which he angers a potential voter. Let's say.
That's all he got.
Yeah.
So who becomes mayor?
Oh well, what happens? Very interesting ending. What happens is that. Yosemite Sam is chasing Bugs Bunny through this town. He's shooting at him because he's just so frustrated, Bugs Bunny. And they come up to the foreground and then they look startled. And then we cut to a scene of a horse sitting in a car being, given a parade through the town. And what Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam realize is that it wasn't, they were running for mayor, but really it was a mare as in a horse. So they look at each other and they say, well, and Bugs Bunny pulls out a gun and he says, Russian roulette. So, Yosemite Sam picks up the gun, puts it his head, and pulls the trigger, and it clicks. So then he hands it to Bugs Bunny, who puts it at his head, and as then the iris comes down on the cartoon, and you hear a shot ring out, then the iris comes back out again to reveal the characters, because we want to know what happened, right? And Bugs Bunny is still there, but Yosemite Sam is shot. So it's a, this week where we've had the suicide of David Spade's sister-in-law, who made handbags, and Anthony Bourdain, and the sister of the Queen of the Netherlands, all committing suicide in one week. Here's a cartoon that was made that ended with a suicide gag.
Wow. And we're playing it. Do you know on the conspiracy, on the conspiracy angle, QAnon and those guys are telling people that a lot of the satanic elite are being offed right now.
Hmm.
So
weird is happening. Something strange is happening.
Yeah, and you know that we know Greg, so you want to stay in touch. You want to find out what's going on.
I will
keep up on what's going on.
I'll tune in next week. I won't understand what's being said, but I'll definitely tune in.
Yeah, you got to get used to it.
okay, well, thank you, Bob.
You promoted my takeover for all these years, so you might also understand what you've facilitated.
Well, it's been delightful staying up way too late with you.
Right. Okay, well, you've been great. You're very popular here.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Awesome. Talk to you next time.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye. Okay, so that leaves Bert. Can you give your report? What's it like under the new restricted conditions? How did you survive the week? Your phone's listed here, Bert. No, Bert? Now Bert's disconnecting. Okay, well, it's time to play Ion then. Let's see. Let's see if there's an email from Bert. Maybe he's explaining where he went. No? I don't see anybody else here. There's an anonymous, but that person is not speaking. Oh, here's Bert. He's back. Okay. What happened? Your Skype go out, Bert? Go ahead, Bert. Unmute yourself. Yes, Bert. Am I being heard? I need to know whether I'm being heard. Yeah, Bert went off. Hey, Bill. Am I being heard, Bill? You're the only guy here to tell me. Well, I'm pulling the panic button, so I guess I'll call back in.
Bob, hear me? Hello? Bob? Hello? Hello? Yeah, you hear me now, Bob?
Yeah, I off?
No, I was off. My Skype was jammed up. I had to call in like three times before I got through. It was just jammed.
Yeah,
my microphone was
working. I saw that. Now, there's nobody else here who was willing to talk to. Like, I asked Bill, you didn't know that I was off, if I was. It's been about 8 hours. I think I get knocked off after 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, let me see if I can get into, host mode. Just a second.
All right.
Okay, I'm now host. So, Bert, what went on this week under the new corporate rules? How'd it go?
I'm forced to use my phone more now. I discovered I didn't know this, but I'm, you know, learning as we go. When I come in with my phone, at first I couldn't do certain things on my phone, but it's because my phone automatically turned into the VLAN that they have at the work. So I couldn't do Facebook, anything outside. I mean, I couldn't do my, Hotmail, and Facebook, which is what I use to communicate between myself to do notes. But I disconnected from the VLAN, but I have to use everything with my phone now, which means that it's a It's a little longer, but I just got to get used to it. I'm using everything on a smaller scale now because I'm looking into a Black Mirror versus, you know,
right.
A monitor.
But you're getting back to full resource capability.
Yes, but it's slower because it's challenging to look at Facebook, but I do that when I come home and I do look at some things, but I can't really like scan everything. But yeah, I'm in full mode, but it's just like I have to take notes. Like if I'm listening, I like write little quotes and time frame and then I have to go back to make more notes. But I, you know, it's always like I said, a workaround. But Bob, two things. I listen to your church in Halifax in 1993, and that was an unbelievable lecture. Unbelievable lecture. But the first note
okay,
is...
Okay, listen to this, Bert, before you go into it. Are you able on your smartphone to listen to recordings?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay, so that lecture was 2001, not 93.
Okay, 2001. So I'm confusing, but yes, the 2001, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Right, in the church, where I talked about Pamela Anderson in the magazine article.
Yes, yes.
Okay,
yes.
In the beginning, I come out and I say, okay, we're going to be like the gangsters, the thieves in cowboy movies. Because it was July 4th, and I said, America is having a big national celebration, and while the town is partying, we sneak in and rob the bank. Okay. If you remember, that's what I said. So this lecture will be us sneaking in and robbing the bank while they celebrate. Well, 2 months later, 9-1-1 happens. And I take that as a metaphor for us stealing stuff because once that happened, everybody had a new tightened economy. All right? So you may not have noticed that metaphorically I predicted 9-1-1 there.
Yeah. Now that you bring that up, yes.
And then the lecture is good. And part of the lecture is because a lot of people I knew in Halifax were there, including Dennis Young, the art critic, that art teacher that I do this ongoing series with. Sue Bohm was there, other people, Art McCain, everybody, Club 22 people. And there was two guys from Dalhousie students, and they were taping me. So I said, if you turn your tape recorder off, I'll tell you who killed Kennedy. And I don't know if that's part of the lecture, but I laid out who killed Kennedy in a way I'd never done in public before. And so that's not part of the video, but that was the legendary thing that I did, that lecture. Does it show me telling? Is there on the video me telling people to turn things off?
No, you tell them that you tell them, but you can't do it in public. So you must have turned off or did it after the lecture. But your words discussion about you asked them, what was the one biggest secret in the 20th century? And everybody was guessing. You said, and then someone said, who killed Kennedy? He said, right. Now, I can tell you, but I can't because you went and explained it. But you never went in how it went done, but you did that discussion as far as
Did that end the tape with the Kennedy assassination saying nothing?
No, it ended at the end. It was cut off, actually, now that I think about it. It wasn't like, thank you, discussion. It was just like the tape cut off. So you must explain it after that.
Yeah, RBK probably ran out of tape or something. And so after I did it, then I explained it off the record, you know, with no recording. Or those guys might have secretly recorded it, but I told them that if they're doing that, they're going to get in trouble. So I think they believe me, and I've never heard anything about it. But that was a pretty good, phenomenal lecture, and it was summing up a lot of stuff, and then the world was going to change in 2 months, well, so-called change. That's the timing of that.
That reminds me. You broke down Pamela Anderson according to the five bodies, but you also did an ingenious breakdown of Bill Clinton in the five bodies. That was really, I mean, you went through it so quick, I couldn't take notes, but I just made a note. You did a breakdown of Bill Clinton of the five bodies. But it was really ingenious how you did the five bodies, the one-fifth.
Right.
That was really, and then there was a breakdown of the ontological which you was the five bodies, but then you did the epistemological. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Of the CIA.
Was that the
that was?
Yeah, the X Files, the CIA, the genetics,
right.
And
yes, that was ingenious. To show the technological aspect, and then you did at the end. You cross-linked the five bodies with the epistemological aspect, which was like, wow. I've never heard that before. That's really ingenious, really ingenious.
Ontological and epistemological.
Yeah.
So I would have to go back and listen to see what I actually said. I give the outline of those, the axis and genetics, those five parts, to Stang and Philo Drummond in February 1978.
Hmm.
You can go back in my diaries and see where I say it there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
February 78, first.
And you were talking subatomic. When you talked about the neuron, which was the... physical, chemical.
Oh yeah,
body.
The neuron. Yeah.
You talked about the, and then you actually put in there, and then I was like, this is like ion is like drained you sucked everything from your brain, because you talked about, you know, the subatomic, the neuron is made of subatomic particles, proton, neutron, and eventually they're going to find out about the neutron. I was like, holy shit.
Wow.
You brought up the you brought up the neutrino.
Holy God. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is. But it's the sign. No, ion has just magnified everything you've said. I mean, I remember ion in one of your recent, ion does not believe in prophets, so I don't know what we would call you. I think Roxana had some interesting words to call you, but you should be on.
Rhapsode,
yes, because you have proof, whereas, you know, a lot of the Bible has prophets and they talk about Jesus and all that, and it's all in book form, but everything that you said is electronic. And now you have the answer of ion here, which is one thing that I went through. I think it was in this, the 2001, how you were outlining it. I could see where ion came forth, how you were outlining that whole lecture. Just had a vision of, I could see why ion came forth, because you're explaining about, you know, the bodies, but then you're talking about the electricity. And I just had a vision. I could see that why ion came forth. And really, we really don't know what you've let out of the bag with ion. That,
yeah,
that's clear.
As he said last week.
That's clear. Yeah, that's clear. That's clear.
Yeah, and the, do I talk about the mystery body in some way?
Yes, you did. And it was very interesting how you didn't talk much about it, but you did talk what you said about the mystery. Let me see if I took note about the mystery body.
I used to say, there is this mystery body, but we don't know what it is, so I haven't got much to say.
Yeah, you call it an archetype. You didn't call it the mystery body. You referred to it as an archetype.
Right. Yeah.
Which was interesting.
Yeah, pretty neat. Let's see, what was I going to say? Okay, Ed's been ransacking my timeline and taking all the video and putting it on his thing. And I posted on my Facebook page, the latest page post, you should look at it, click on it. He put all the videos in one thread. You know, it's like, you know, scroll down, all these things that Jerry made.
Okay.
Jerry Fialka. Okay. All these little ones. I'd be interested in what you think of those different ones.
Yeah, I'll look at that. It's funny. One note I want to say about 2001 is that you are like the poster child for the Completement products, because you look really lanky in those videos, but having met you in person, you have broad. So I mean, you're like you're not the same guy.
Right.
When I met you, I mean, your shoulders are broad. You're big. You know, you're muscular. Compared to what you see in those videos. I mean, it's just like
I'm a skinny runt.
Yeah. But that's not how you are now. It's amazing to see your transformation.
Right. Cause back then, I was under house arrest waiting for something to do. So I wasn't doing any sports or any physical activity, not even swimming. We never went to the beach. Right. I was just being a culture vulture in New York City.
Culture vulture. That's good. That's a good one. Culture
vulture. You know, just doing the internet and going to museums and things, just doing what you're forced to do in New York.
Right.
Reading a lot, too.
Right.
Yes, I was around 2004. I was in a swimming pool down in Florida. Somebody took a picture, and I looked at it. I said, holy shit, I got a flat chest. You know, I noticed. There was no pictures of me half naked for years because I wasn't anywhere to do it. I wasn't in the beach or anything. So I noticed, I've lost some of my muscles. That's 2004. And then, you know, 10 years later, I'm muscle again.
Yes, yes. Hey, Bob, I'm going to add something. I heard you talk about the exes. And it was, I think it was in the 1993, the Paul Watson, I believe his name.
Yeah.
And you said that you had contact with these extraterrestrials, but you couldn't reveal it. And it's like.
Well, that was, okay. Remember, we played, was it last week? The, Secret Council of 10. And I say in there, the exes landed in February 88, therefore allowing me to take over in March 88 with the election.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Right.
So the Exodus landed 10 years before Stang would say. He said July 5th, 98, but it was in February 88. So I would, I don't know, never got to, see, I didn't get to talk much outside of CKLN until the albums came out. And then I was being interviewed by newspapers all over North America. And that's when I would say stuff that I hadn't outlined too much, like about the Exodus and all that. So when this guy comes along from BBC to talk about UFOs or whatever we talk about, that's when I lay that out, that the X's have landed. There's an opportunity, you know, and it's on a big – that thing got played on Sky TV in Europe. You know what that is, Sky TV?
I've heard of it, but I, you know, don't have access to it. I've heard of Sky
TV,
yes.
Right. I think Murdoch owned it or owns it. So – so in the that guy, Paul Watson, he, after the interview, he had something to confide in me, that he had a big dream, and he believed he was going to be, it might have been at the Giza pyramids, he was going to be when the UFOs come. That's what he, personally, in his mythology, he believed he was destined. So when I started talking about this stuff, he couldn't do it on the official interview, but after he says, holy shit, you're the guy I might be looking for because, you know, I'm going to do it, and you're saying you're going to do it. So there's a whole interesting exchange after the official interview, and it's around that theme. The part I couldn't talk about is what the Evergreens told me in 1989. They were very reluctant in talking about the ETs and all that. They called them the Boodians. And Stang them called them the Exis, right? X hyphen I S T S. They exist, or maybe there's no hyphen, just X, capital X I S T S. And so I would mix the Boodians with the Exis, play, you know, have different terms, interchangeable. So what they told me, so they told me in October 89, after an actual landing in Russia, and they laid the details out, and they said, now this is the first time we've told anybody. So I was the first to get the word from the Evergreens about their scenario. So I was felt special on that connection and special with the Exodus landing, all a metaphor for Ion, I say now, you know.
Yes.
And so that's – is that all? That's what I wanted to say about what I knew, what the sources of it, and my intuition – and waiting for something to show up.
Yes. Yes. Also, that was entertaining to Paul Watson is that the language you were using, explaining, had him really, he was fried. He couldn't understand.
Yeah.
He said, yes, maybe later I'll understand, but right now I don't know what to think or, because it was really,
right.
but I could understand him. When I first came aboard, I listened to you, but now I you know, everything that you said was clear. That's
right.
What's the fun thing of listening to you for so long that you understand it.
You hear, and you know where that guy is. That guy's underwater. He can't hear it.
Yes, he is. He is.
That's where you were.
That's amazing thing. That's the amazing thing of everyone. I mean, it's just like Jerry, not to Jerry Fialka, he took the D cell, and I'm like, my question is he